You're listening to the Deeply Graphic Design Cast, the show about all things design, from the creative side to the business side and all points in between. Follow the show on Twitter at Wes McDowell. Want the gang to answer your question on an upcoming episode? Send in your listener question to questions@thedeependesign.com or via Twitter using hashtag DGDC. Here are your hosts.
Wes McDowell in Chicago.
Mikkel Morrison in Seattle.
Nick Longo in Los Angeles.
All right, everyone back together again. Thanks again for joining us. If you're brand new to listening to the show, or if you're a returning listener, we love all of you guys. You're all our, you're all the fourth person on the show, really. So we thank you for continuing to support us.
I love that.
And leaving those 5-star reviews on iTunes, all that good stuff. So, and I do want to reiterate again, speaking of iTunes, they do cut us off after 100 episodes. So we have like quite a few classic episodes before that. And if you want access to those, all you have to do is go to thedeependesign.com/classics, and you're going to hit a little button that says pay with a tweet. And basically all we're asking you to do is just tweet the show out, write a Facebook post. It'll walk you through it. And then once you do that, the gates are magically open for you for all the back classic episodes. And you can get the fundamental episodes, the educational stuff from back in the day before we had Nick. So
good times.
Just, yeah. Oh, the show was so much better back then.
Just
does that seem wrong that they cut off after 100? If you maintain good reviews and ratings, does that seem...
That sounds so weird
to
me.
Harsh.
I'll be honest with you. I can't really blame iTunes. It's something wrong with the feed that I can't... for the life of me figure out how to fix, and I'm afraid to go too far into fixing it because I'm so paranoid that it's going to just destroy the feed.
You have zero
you'll
episodes
have to start all over again and zero subscribers and all that.
Wow.
So unfortunately it's not
okay.
Yeah, it's not because there are podcasts with like 500 episodes. Somehow the universe hates me, so that's what it is. No, I'm sorry. Hates us, the three of us together.
Oh,
so
the
anyway.
First one was better.
So we've got, we're all pretty excited here. We're going to meet up again at Adobe Max next week. So can't wait to see you guys there.
That's going to be amazing. I can't wait. This is like our annual time to have fun and party. And
I love it.
Be
it's
in the same city.
That. Yeah.
That's just the coolest part.
Yeah. It's great.
Fathers, lock up your daughters. Here we come.
And actually, this is the time that I should probably say this. For listeners that are attending and are going to, you know, witness the live show, I have a bit of a belly. I'm pregnant again. So
Yay!
Don't look at me and think, ooh, she looks odd now.
She's really happened. Let herself go since the last Adobe Max.
Well, yeah, congratulations. Yeah, no, so. We've known for a little bit, but... glad you're finally keying the audience in on it as well. So congrats.
Yeah.
That's just more alcohol for you and me, Wes.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. I'm used to like having a few cocktails with you, Mikkel. I don't know that I'm going to like you sober.
I'm not too conservative. I had a glass the other night. I don't finish it.
Just a sip.
But I just have a,
They say you're allowed a little bit of wine these days. They have come out and said
They say it's a midwife tale, but I'm choosing to believe it.
Nice.
Very
well,
cool.
Well, I can't wait to see you guys, and we're doing our live show there, so that'll be fun. So the next episode that drops after this one is going to be a live show from Adobe Max.
Yes.
So that's going to be awesome. I can't wait for that. But before, and we have a great guest today, and he's waiting very patiently in the wings, but before we get there... Let's talk some Skillshare. We love the Skillshare. You know, I've been going to that website for the past, I don't know, five years or so. Whenever I just need to learn anything new, they've got everything. Like, you know, you can go to YouTube. You can see some 14-year-old in his parents' basement playing techno music while he's just not even talking you through it. He's just kind of, you're just seeing his screen. No one's got time for that. I don't have time for that.
Yeah,
so
where's the
where
dialogue?
Skillshare comes in. Yeah. Oh, those are the worst. But
so
Skillshare,
true.
Not only do you learn a ton on there, but they're so well produced and they feel like there is just quality, and you know you're getting taught by industry experts. So they're basically, you know, they've got 20,000 classes in design, photography, marketing, technology, anything you want, freelancing, all that stuff. And you can take the classes in the big things, the little things. You just want to learn something small, they've got it. So if you're trying to deepen your professional skill set, start a side hustle, foreshadowing today, or just explore a new passion. Skillshare is there to keep you learning and thriving. And in fact, I was able to find, I typed in side hustle, and there are a few classes, one called Side Hustle Toolkit, Tips and Tools for Starting and Growing Your Side Hustle. There's another one called Pricing, Work in a Side Hustle or Freelance Business. And I also was able to find like many courses on t-shirt design, which is going to come in later as well. So long story short, they have it all. And so I want you to join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare. And I'm one of them today with a special offer just for our listeners. You can get 2 months of Skillshare for just 99 cents. That's right. Skillshare is offering our listeners 2 months of unlimited access to those 20,000 classes for less than a dollar, you guys. So to sign up, go to Skillshare.com/graphic. Again, go to Skillshare.com/graphic to start your 2 months now. That's Skillshare.com/graphic. All right. On with the show. When your side hustle wins is what we're talking about today.
What do you do?
You want to take?
Yeah. Yeah. So this is probably super believable. I would imagine we, just based on our loyal listener, quantities, that people will recognize Dave with Stately Type. We have him on again. It was July of 2015 that he was with us back when I was in the Salt Lake region. So we're just super privileged to have you back. David, welcome.
Hi.
Yeah, welcome.
Glad to be back.
Right on.
I can't believe it's been 3 years since you've been here. That's crazy.
I know.
Wow, I know. That seems wrong. I believe you, but it just seems like it's been longer.
Yeah, just while Wes was wrapping up that Skillshare spiel just now, I did a double check to see when we had our exchange the last time we recorded with you, and it was in fact July of 2015. Yeah, weird. Huh.
We've had Bill Gardner on seven times between then and now.
So I guess, Dave, we got to get you in more often, at least once a year.
Right. Yeah, that would be awesome. Because one thing, you know, David, I'll have you introduce yourself, but things have absolutely changed for David on a business and a personal level, and that's why we're having this cool follow-up episode to talk about all the ins and outs of the transition, both physical, strategic, emotional, all of it. So, and the reason that I truly, this is going to be an absolute joy, and we've been anxious to have you again, is because we've got some listeners that we absolutely know are in the boat that you had been in prior to taking the jump. So,
do you want to get listeners caught up with what the top last time versus now, like what the?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you don't mind, do you want me to jump in?
And go for it.
Yeah. Sure. Let's do it. Absolutely. Okay.
So I started an apparel business, a t-shirt company about 5 years ago. It's going to be 5 years ago at the end of this year, called Stately Type. And when I started out, it was just a side gig. I had a full-time job as a creative director at a technology company. And I would work on my little side gig on nights and on weekends. And my wife and I built it up from nothing to, you know, a business that was earning money for us. That was, you know, something substantial for us. And about 3 years into it, it was probably a little bit after I talked to you guys, like we got to the point where I felt like we were making enough with it in terms of dollars. We were making enough to where I could quit my day job if I wanted to, but I was terrified to do it.
Yeah.
And it took me another 2 years. It's only been a couple of months ago. It's going on 3 months ago that I finally did quit my job and go full time with this.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah, that was the transition has been really interesting. I have a lot of things to say.
But yeah, it's been fun. I would imagine.
Yeah. So let's just jump right into it then, Dave. So like, have you had any regrets since you left your corporate role to take over Stately Type 100%? And would you be comfortable sharing one or two of those regrets if you do?
Yeah, I do have regrets. My number one regret is that I didn't leave sooner.
I knew it.
Nice.
I knew it.
Boom.
Because it's so easy to say that now, right? I mean, like, that's awesome. Yeah. I love hearing that.
Well, the biggest thing, it's not like I don't say that. And what I don't mean is like, I'm raking in so much cash now that I wish I had done. Like, that's not what I mean. Like, it's a struggle, right? Like, my wife and I always say that we're flying a plane and right now we're flying it very low to the ground.
Right.
So yeah, it's a struggle. What I mean is, we had built it up to the point where we could survive, like I said, about 2 years ago. And I wish I'd quit then just cause I'd be that much farther ahead now. There's so much more time that I have to work on my business that I just didn't have before. Time was like my number one limiting factor before, and there was only so much I could do to build my business. And I feel like for the last 2 years, it's been kind of plateaued because of that. And so, I just wish I'd quit sooner.
Nice.
Yeah,
I think with that's so many different decisions. Huh. Yeah, it's like people can, when you're on the other side of it, you can obviously, it's easy to look back and be like, oh, why didn't I, you know, and, sure. And so it's really interesting that, you know, that would be it. I mean, like anything else that kind of you can look back at and say like, I wish
I had saved more money.
Sure.
See? Yeah, that's there you go. True.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't want to come on here and like bash corporate America and bash
not
technology companies or, you know, like in-house jobs or agency jobs. Like, I think there are lots of opportunities for lots of different kinds of people. And depending on your personality type, depending on where you're at in your career, like a full-time corporate job could be the best thing in the world for you. And it was great for me for years. And I'm glad that I did it. I'm not saying I wish I had started my own business when I was 19. I don't. I wasn't ready to do that.
Right.
But I just feel like for me, I got to the point where this is going to sound arrogant. I'm not saying I mastered my corporate job, but like I got to the point where I'm like, okay, I know how to do this. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of got repetitive for me. And that's why I started the side gig to begin with. Like, okay, let's try something new. Yeah. Let's learn some new things. Yeah. And I just got to the point where the only thing holding me back was my fear. And yeah, that like I said, that's my regret. I just wish I had gotten over that fear a little bit sooner and gotten into my business full time a little bit sooner.
Wow.
That's better than the regret I had when I moved from LA to Chicago when I thought, what the hell did I just do? Like, in terms of, like, that's like, so
having
cool.
to start with establishing yourself. Yeah. I know. That's the thing that wasn't a missing component that is extremely crucial for Stately Type. You were well established before you quit. I mean, people know about Stately Type.
Like I said,
that's a big deal.
Yeah, and I don't recommend to people, like, if you're starting your own gig, I mean, unless you're going to raise capital and have some runway to work with, if you're trying to bootstrap whatever it is that you're doing and if you're starting small, I recommend that you do keep your day job and you do grow it on the side. Because you need to kind of see if it's got legs. I mean, you need to see if it's going to work.
Yeah.
And there's just some really basic stuff that you got to figure out that you've never had to think about before. I mean, for my wife and I, it's going to sound stupid now, but like we started making sales and like, we didn't know how to package and ship the stuff. We didn't know. There were so many things that we just were like, oh, I guess we'll set up a Shopify store and learn how to do Shopify. We're going to learn how to do postage through Indicia. We're going to learn, like, there are all these tools and things that you just have to do. And it's a lot more comfortable to do that with the safety net of like a full-time job, like a paycheck.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
And then when you get over some of those hurdles, then you can shift.
Yeah, I would highly recommend, if listeners haven't listened to your original episode, it'd be worth a shot to listen to, because I think you really threw in the guts and the hard work and the rolling up your sleeve. But more importantly, what you threw in, I thought was amazing, was just this passion to do it. You're like, creatively, I might be at a standstill here with the job, it's still paying the bills, but I need to express myself in other ways. And it's amazing how much that resonated with me, and I loved hearing it. So I would really recommend that.
I absolutely remember you talking about being your own boss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in corporate America, there's this chain, of course, and you report to somebody.
Yeah.
Even if you are, you know, management and directing, there's still a chain. There's still a chain to accommodate.
It always happens.
And in the beginning, several years ago, David, I remember you mentioning, you know, you just got tired of, you know, with clientele, the feedback, and to make the shifts when it wasn't even your call. You weren't even recommended it. It just felt like BS.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, what am I doing? I'm supposed to be a creative, consultant here, and I have to accommodate these customer requests. That's part of the gig.
Oh yeah.
But
yeah.
Now this is different. You're in charge of all that. You're getting votes. I mean, we can get to that.
Mm-hmm.
You continue to get votes nonetheless. And maybe we can talk a little bit about that later, because I have had some curious questions about your Instagram following and your shifts in what I think might be some alterations to your method. But I don't know. It might be assumption. I'm not totally sure, just to see the progression that you guys might be with respect to the progression that you guys are making. But yeah, we can get to that. I don't want to forget to. I forgot to add that in to the outline. Yeah.
Cool.
But go ahead, Nick.
Yeah. Here's what I'm curious about. So now that you have this extra time and you're happy that you've done it and everything, have you and your wife picked up any other elements of the business now that you didn't do prior because of that? And like, what kind of things maybe in marketing strategies, or have you done, like, are you looking into partnerships? Like, how has it expanded you to say, I can take this business further?
Yeah. The answer to that question is mostly boring stuff. Like,
of course,
when you're building software, have you guys heard of the term technical debt?
No.
So
can't say I have.
In software development, developers, when they're building a piece of software, like, so they're work on it for 3 years, 4 years, over time you develop technical debt, which just means like you've done things in kind of a stupid way in the past, maybe to cut corners, to get things done quickly. And over the course of years, like, you build up just code that doesn't perform as well as it should for the job that it's being asked to do. And so sometimes developers will spend, you know, a certain amount of time going through, and instead of building a new feature, they'll go back through and refactor, like recode, to get rid of that technical debt. So most of what I've been doing is cleaning up business technical debt. Like, I had, I was running this as a side gig with not a lot of time. So I've just been spending a lot of time going back and doing really stupid stuff, like legal stuff, taxes, like just catching up on everything.
But sure that's so peace of mind though, isn't it? Like, I mean, you were almost probably going, I wish I just had the time to do it the right way all that time. And now you are.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean,
everything we do,
yeah, I spent years
here,
cutting corners.
I mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
Little shortcuts, even though you and your wife had been in it together since the beginning, you absolutely had to cut corners in order to balance your life between family, corporate, and stately type. Sure.
Yeah. So a lot of it is just process. Like, I've been working on building up processes for my team. We have one employee now. We're looking on adding additional employees. So I just want a really clean playing field to work with. Another shift we have been making is we have been reaching out. You ask about like maybe marketing activities that we've been doing.
Yeah.
We've been reaching out a lot to bloggers to try to get like sponsored posts and guest posts. I've been building out. Have you guys heard of Tailwind?
I've seen their logo.
It's software that lets you schedule.
Like, for scheduling posts, right?
Scheduling Instagram posts, scheduling Pinterest posts. So we've been working on automating and setting up some of that. I still have a lot of work to do on it, but I'm trying to make, like, before, everything I was doing was manual and you know, just kind of the series of one-off activities. I'm trying to create an actual company now with programs and repeatable processes.
Okay.
So good.
A lot of it is like stuff that nobody on the outside is seeing that I'm working on. It's just boring stuff that I'm doing behind the scenes.
The behind the curtain. The improvements will be there down the road. Yeah. I mean, they're not seeing those little changes, but anything on the creative or the fun side that you can say, oh man, it's so much better now that with this extra time. You're actually probably designing in daylight now.
I don't know. I have a weird answer to that. I thought before I quit, I thought it was going to be like, this is going to be amazing. Yeah. I have so much time to just draw and create. But deadlines are good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
and your own deadlines are not that not that hard, sure. Right?
Yeah, like when I was running it as a side gig, it was like, I have to do this because I want to go to sleep tonight. I've got to get this done and publish it. Oh, I can't work on it tomorrow because I got to go to work. Like, I just had these really tight deadlines, so I had to turn things around. And one of the things I've struggled with the most is like, I don't have a boss now. I can do whatever I want. I can work on something for 60 hours, right? Like, and so I feel like my output so far, I'm turning this around now, but my output in the first couple of months has been less than what I was producing before. Mm-hmm. And so that's really a problem I'm going to have to solve, right? Like, it's great not to have a boss, but it sucks not to have deadlines, right?
Yeah. You got to make your own. Right. Now.
That awareness is key, though. That's so good that you're recognizing that. I've absolutely thought of the same thing. We're all perfectionists. We'll keep going if we don't have to, if we don't have a stop button.
Yeah.
You know,
and I'll scrap things too. I'll be like, oh, this isn't working. I'm not going to publish this one. And it's like before I would never do that because I couldn't afford to do that. I'd be like, well, this one's not great, but
gotta go.
I gotta publish.
Yeah.
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 It's one of those unknown, like unforeseen pitfalls of doing your own thing that people probably never think about.
Yeah.
Go out
I didn't.
Their own.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Right.
But for it's sure. There.
I thought it was going to be all upside, but no, there's some downside.
I'm sure one of your kids would love to be your boss and just like play it for fun. You can you can always do that. They can revolve.
Right.
Boss.
I'll try that out.
Let us know how that goes.
So now that you've fully transitioned though out of that corporate role and that world of it in of itself, you're niching probably like never before, even though you have mentioned that it became redundant even at that side of your day job, there probably was still this subconscious balance that was being maintained between your two gigs. So I just want to know how that's been resonating with you. I mean, I saw you've opened up the merchandise a little, you know, there's quilting, it's not just apparel. It's furthered itself, but nonetheless, it is still cranking out artwork for merchandise means. Yeah.
That was one thing I wanted to cover because I feel like some people will be confused if they look at my brand right now because it's really changed over the last little while.
Okay.
A couple of years ago, maybe it was 3 years ago, my wife, who is an avid quilter, she loves to buy fabric. She loves to create design quilts, make quilts. This sounds weird, I think, when I talk to most people about this, because I think for most people they think quilting and they think like, you know, my grandma maybe used to do that, or somebody else's grandma maybe used to. But it's actually a pretty active community, and with social media, they're really well connected now. Anyway, my wife's been a quilter for a long time. We, about 3 years ago, we did a Stately Type Week where we focused on quilting t-shirts, like t-shirts with kind of inside jokes for quilters, for this tribe of quilters.
I love that they have that. That is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
That's great.
And honestly,
that's great.
I honestly didn't think it would do that well. I just thought, I was trying everything. It's like, let's do, we did shirts for teachers. We did shirts for, all kinds of different things. And so we tried quilters and we sold more in that weekend than we sold the whole first year of our business.
Wow.
In terms of,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. So then I really started thinking about it differently.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. The whole thing of the riches are in the niches. Like, it is 100% true. And so what I realized, like, over the past few years, we've been looking at all of our sales data. Like, since then we've done several more, like, we did a week for people who sew, a week for people who knit, for like crochet, things like that. We've tried a bunch of that, a bunch of different things, and just quilters and people who sew, those just consistently outperform everything else that we do. And so we've been doing more and more of that. We spun off a brand specifically for that tribe called Maker Valley. And so that's like my wife's brand, right? If you go to Maker Valley on Instagram, you can see everything she does. Mostly it's like, this is going to sound bad. It's like porn for quilters. It's like tons of pictures of fabric.
No, it doesn't sound bad at all.
I
love
what that
because
website be exactly. Write that down for later.
Wow, that is so great though. It's like a who knew, you know?
Yeah. No, I never would have guessed it. And it's just through trial and error and experimentation. That's the only reason why we even realized that this was could be a thing. And then as we've done more and more of it, we realize, like, if you look at this audience, like, there are a lot of people within this industry, within this tribe. They all have similar interests. They all have similar, like, background and biases and things like that. But there's not really anybody creating apparel for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
or good apparel, like.
Right, right. Yeah, if you go to, you know, Amazon and do, or, like, Cafe Press or any of those, like, mm-hmm. you can find shirts for those kind of people. But there's not really, like, a high-end quality product being created for them. So we came in, we're coming in and filling that up. And more we're shifting. That's one of the problems with Stately Tribe is that when I started, I didn't really have an audience. I didn't have a tribe. Like, who am I selling to? I was kind of saying, anybody, you know? Because I was just trying to find who I was going to sell to. But this, I mean, I really feel like this is going to be our focus moving forward, because this is where we're making money.
That's amazing. And the maker thing is a perfect thing to tap into right now, with it being so, like you said, it's like you found one niche, but then there's all those other ones that kind of are around it. Then there's this whole other pool of what makers, there's woodworkers, there's you name it.
Yeah.
And the amount of shows about makers now on TV and everything, it's incredible. So what a perfect little alley to find, you know? Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. People love to feel like they belong to a group, for sure.
Yeah.
So,
right. Yeah.
So now that you've gone full time out on your own, have you expanded the actual business, like hiring people or how's that been going for you?
Good. So we have one full time employee right now. My sister, she's like our warehouse manager. She's there in our little warehouse every day. She answers all of our customer service emails, and she handles returns and exchanges. She ships out all the orders. So that was a big deal when we got that off of our plate. That's been like a year and a half since we hired her. And then we have a bunch of other, like, contract people that we work with. I have one guy right now who's running all of our Facebook ads. It's not just Facebook. He runs our digital ads. So he's constantly experimenting of, like, what works, what doesn't work, what can we, who can we sell to, what are additional products that we can create. And, so that's been great. And, you know, we've hired a guy to handle our bookkeeping. We work with him as a contract worker. And then we have another person that we work with. We're starting to sell quilt kits as well as apparel, which involves cutting a lot of fabric. So we've hired her to cut and assemble kits for us.
Wow. That's crazy. Cool. Are you, when you look at these people, I'm sorry, Wes, but I was just going to ask, when you look at these people that you're bringing on, even contracting wise, are you thinking ahead of maybe thinking, like, what if they become employees? Are you thinking of that ahead of time, so maybe that can transition really smoothly?
Yeah. Every day I wish that we could, I keep thinking, like, that's one of the things I miss about my corporate job is, like, I had a team of people and
so
I could
easy.
Just tell them what to do and they would do it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't have
their job
anymore.
Relied
so, yeah,
on.
Yeah. Every day I'm like, mm-hmm. Right.
Doesn't go
every
the same with the subcontractors.
Right.
Right.
Or if you, when you hire your, like, a family member, like you said, it's your sister you hired. So she's a full-time employee then, or?
She's part-time.
Okay. So what would you say is the biggest kind of difference between hiring an employee versus a contractor? And how has it been working with a family member who, because I've run into this where I've like several family members who I might want to hire for certain things. But then in my mind, it's like, I, however, don't ever want to hire someone that I couldn't safely fire if I had to.
Right.
Yeah, so
yeah,
I mean,
you have to be super open.
Thought about or?
Yeah, no, I was worried. A big part of me didn't want to hire her at the beginning, just because she's my sister. It's been great though.
Yeah.
I guess the only thing I would say is, one, don't hire them because they're your family member. Hire them because they're the right fit for the kind of work that they're doing. Like, her personality and temperament is perfect for the kind of work that she's doing. Like, she loves it, and she's perfect for it. If she wasn't that, I don't think I would have hired her. Like, I don't think it would have been a good idea to hire her.
Yeah.
Hire her. The other thing is,
I'd say hiring a family member, like, is even not only don't hire them because they're family, but I think, like, give it a second thought if they're family, if anything
just
else.
In just case.
I mean, imagine if yeah. someone was doing a bad job for you and then you have to yeah. You have to get rid of them. It's like, it's going to be a long Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah.
After right. that, you know, so.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say is try before you buy, like have them work little oh, one-off, good, like come good, in and help on a Saturday, you know, like try them out, see how
assess.
They are.
Sure.
Yeah. And then decide whether or not you should
smart.
Hire
them. Yeah. And that goes both ways. That goes for mm-hmm. the same for her. Yeah. It's great. Right. It's a win-win.
Absolutely.
Nice.
The other thing I was going to say about hiring a family member is you have to be super open with them. Like, because she's my sister, like, I tell her way more about the business than I would tell a normal employee, right? Like, I just want her to there have total transparency so she's not ever wondering, like, how is it going? You know, like, is he going to have to fire me? Or, like, I just okay. want her to be – I just want to give her heads up on everything, and I'm just super honest with her.
That's good.
That's really respectful. She's lucky.
And she feels a little closer to the company, which is great, too. And hopefully you get a better partner down the road.
Yeah, with uh-huh. that. Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
That's cool.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So you've explained a few things that you've been looking into expanding the business. I know like the quilt kits and you're doing like enamel pins and everything else, right?
Mm-hmm.
So anything else down the road, has this freedom now allowed you to really think down the road and something so out of the box of a new merchandise idea or area that you've always wanted to?
There are a lot of things that we're considering right now. Like we're going to be rolling out Christmas ornaments this year.
Oh, that's a great idea.
We're working on,
fun.
I don't know. There's some other things I don't really want to mention. No,
yeah. As long as you know you,
yeah,
just,
sure.
Just expressing the fact that you have that time now to kind of be there, right? Like all the times yeah. you probably wanted to and you can't.
Yeah.
Even still with that idea for the ornaments, just for example, is half the battle finding the proper quality vendor that can yeah. fabricate.
That's what I was yeah. just going to ask. Yeah.
I used to think, like, before you get into actually producing stuff, you think, you know, kind of the sky's the limit. And I guess it can be as long as you have all the right contacts.
Yeah.
But that's the hardest part is just figuring out, like, it's not just what am I going to make? It's who's going to make what I want to make? How much are they going to charge me for it? How long is it going to take? How do they handle quality assurance?
Yes.
There's just a lot that goes into it.
Yeah.
And sure. And then you have to factor into all of that, like how well will this sell? It's just
quantities to order. Hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
do you guys place orders with these vendors as a test, like for you and your wife to us before you engage?
Yeah. We almost always, whenever we're looking at a new vendor, we'll do one small order where, you know, it's not really worth it to us because we're doing it in such a low quantity that the cost per item is pretty high.
Yeah.
And we're not, you know, like we're not thinking about we're going to make money on this particular one item. We might just break even, but we're just testing them. Like, how is it, what is it like to work with them? Do they hit their deadlines? Do they communicate? Are they upfront? And then, yeah, just to feel them out before we really start to use them a lot.
Well, okay. And they become an extension of your company at that point. So you have to kind of do that in a way to make sure it's following under all the same principles that you're following, you know, which is really tough, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I value that almost more than anything else in the manufacturers and vendors that we work with is like just their reliability. Because if they drop the ball on something, my customers don't blame them. They don't even know who they are. They blame me.
Sure.
Right. It's my brand that's dropping the ball. So I just want, we're constantly looking for super reliable, even if it's a little bit more expensive, even if it's a little bit more, you know, like they're farther away from us and it's kind of a pain to work with them. If they're reliable, that's the number one thing for me.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. That takes overall precedence. That makes sense. So shifting gears a little bit, just to talk about the emotional and or physical components of the transition, both positive and what you didn't see coming that turned out to be more in a negative life, having to do with perhaps I don't want you to feel like you've been put on the spot and need to talk about your marriage, but you know, how your family has reacted, family time as a father that you don't know what to do with, or that you feel particularly sensitive about. I mean, my head would, I overthink everything. So my head would just spin about all that.
It's honestly, it's been a mixed bag. I was expecting all these positives and I've experience them. Like I have more time with my kids. I help them with homework where I wasn't doing that before. Yeah. You know, like I just have more time with them, and that's great. I have more time for myself. Like I've lost 15 pounds since I quit my job. I meditate every morning now, or I didn't used to do that. My wife and I go on a hike every morning. We didn't used to do that. I'm eating better.
That's so important. Yeah. You're not alone with that. So many people in that zone, that happens almost naturally in a way, because you want to take care of yourself, you know, juggling all that. Well,
you feel like you have more time to do it. I always felt like I was kind of rushed before with everything. I just felt like it was rushed. And now I feel like, you know, it's up to me to set that schedule, which is both the positive and the negative, right? Like I've experienced all the positive benefits of that, but I also experienced the negative too, where it's like, because I have the time and the choice to work on anything I want, making decisions has become so much harder for me than it was before. Like it's hard to prioritize. It's hard to be strategic. I'm constantly having to monitor my thoughts of like, is this the right thing? Is this the best thing to do? It's the mental side of it is something I did not expect. Like I'm having to do a lot of thought work just to keep my brain from going crazy of like, we're going to go make rumps. Everything's falling apart. You know, like, I don't know. That part's been tough.
Well,
meditation. Yeah. That makes sense. That's a good
one. Yeah. That's probably keeping you sane. Yeah. Cause I know that feeling. Yeah. You're like everybody, with the extra time, it's only natural, I think, to start doubting certain things and worrying about things. But as long as you are, like you said, finding those little things to kind of put in checkpoints of your day, so it doesn't go for 7-8 hours where you're like freaking out. You did something, you went on a hike, or you did something to kind of just clear your mind and get back on track. Yeah. No pun intended.
Yeah.
I love that.
So you mentioned that you have like a lot more time with your family now, which is great. Do you feel like your family has taken notice of that and they're appreciative of that, or?
My kids love it. My wife, I think she was in this mode.
She's headed up to heater with you at this point. Like,
there are some days where I think she gets her fill of me. No, I mean, she wasn't working out of the home before. She was working, you know, for our company, but she was working in the home. And all of our kids were old enough now to where, you know, she had a big chunk of the day where they were at school and I was off at work, and she was just kind of in her zone working. And now all of a sudden I'm thrown into her day. And for me, I'm loving it because I'm like, I'm not in the corporate environment anymore, and I have this freedom, and it's just you and me. And for her, I felt like, at least initially, it was like, wait, what's happening? Who's this guy? What's going on?
Yeah.
But I don't know. She's adjusted. We've both adjusted, and we wouldn't go back. Like, we love it. It's great.
So she still works at home as well. So you share the home during the day. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I could just see her. She's like, Dave, the kitchen is not for conference calls.
Well, we've kind of worked this out where she has her half of the house and I have my half of the house.
Good.
And we'll kind of come together in the living room in the middle when, you know, when we're working on things. But she cranks away down in her sewing room on everything that she's working on. And I'm up here either drawing at the table or here at the computer. And it works.
That's great.
Nice.
That's so cool. That's great. That's very cool. It's an adjustment for everyone. It really, truly is.
Even the house. The house is probably going, what's going on? Who's this guy home all the time? That's great. What kind of learning curves did you not see coming, or something that, you know, now that you've been part of the transition here a little bit, is there anything that maybe like on a learning curve that surprised you?
I've really had to... I feel like I had the luxury before of wearing my graphic designer hat a lot more often, my creator maker hat, you know what I mean? And now that there's no safety net, I feel like I have to wear the business owner hat a lot more. And I have to make decisions based on profitability and scalability and things like that. Whereas, you know, like the graphic designer side of me maybe just wants to go out and do something fun and creative and cool. Like I constantly have to check myself and answer those questions. Like, is this going to sell? Who are we going to sell it to? How are we going to market this? So the learning curve for me is like, I feel like I'm having to learn how to be a business owner now. Sure. Whereas before with the side gig, I mean, there were things that I was learning, but it wasn't the same.
But let's face it, you didn't have all that time to like kind of think about it. And now what you do.
Yeah.
I think it's smart because I love that you brought that part up. I think our listeners would probably, you know, really appreciate that fact because there's so much of the time where that has turned to a positive for me. Like the idea of being a business person and like, I love doing that side stuff. That stuff, it's one, it's a break from the creativity thing. So your mind gets a break, but isn't it I think it could be rewarding too, to be like, wow, man, like how resourceful you guys are becoming in finding vendors and all this other stuff. It's like, that shit's great. That's amazing.
Yeah. That's one thing that's been surprising to me is how fun it is. When I was younger, like I always looked at that side of things as like, I just kind of hated it. Like the suits, you know, like,
yeah,
you don't know what you're doing, man. You know, like so I just hated that. Yeah. Right. Yes. The soulless corporate crap. I'm like, especially with a small business, it's like, it's fun. Like I get to make decisions for myself and my company. I get to grow in the way that I want to grow. And I'm learning all kinds of things that I didn't know before. And some of it's creative and some of it's business. I don't know. To me, they're much more intertwined now than what I thought they were before.
Yeah. Yeah. You're able to use the left and right side of your brains far more together in way of balance, which I don't want to let go of production and working directly with vendors for that very reason. It's just more, it's more literal. It's more mathematical. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. I hear photographers say the same thing. You know, it's a great balance between the technicalities and the creative.
Yeah.
It makes sense, right?
Yep. Yeah. I love the business strategy part even more than the design part now. The older I get, the more I'm interested.
Yeah. You've shifted. So, you've definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Okay. So moving on. So without that safety net of a steady paycheck, do you and your wife find yourselves panicking at times? And how do you keep your mind from like, how do you keep your head from not going there and just focusing on the positive? And I mean, I meditate too, and it works wonders in that regard for me.
Yeah.
But that can't be the answer 24/7. So how do you guys do that?
It's been really tough. I mentioned this a little bit, like, when the safety net's gone, like it's so much easier to freak out. Before, when I had the day job, it was like, you know, we had a good month with the side gig. We had a bad month. Like I never really got too stressed out about it because it didn't really matter. You know what I mean? Like, cause I always had that steady paycheck, but now it's like, it can feel like life or death. Like if we have a bad month, it's like, oh no.
Yeah.
So
the roller coaster.
Right. This is going to sound woo woo, but we've both been working with a life coach and it has helped us so much. Mostly it's just about training the way that you think, becoming aware of how you're thinking and just some of the tendencies that you have to go negative or to overreact or to, you know, to freak out. Like just being more aware of that has helped me so much. And then being really, purposeful about how I'm thinking like the person who's already succeeded thinking. I know that, again, this sounds so cornball, cheeseball, but like,
we've never even real. Like talked about that as a possible fix. You know, I think
we haven't amazing. Covered that. We've had full on episodes about quality of life and maintaining that. Cause when you're working the grind, I mean, you're in the cave oftentimes, you know, just trying to, you know, flush things out, but absolutely that's a really good topic. All on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. And I mean, there are good life coaches out there and there are bad ones, but if you find a good one who can help you, who's got a good system just to help you become aware of how you think and any traps that you fall into in your thinking and to help you like look beyond, I think so often we get caught down in the weeds of like the everyday problems that we're trying to deal with. If you can have somebody, some mentor or somebody who's helping you kind of rise above that once a week, at least to be sure. Look at long-term, look at the big picture. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it's so helpful. There are business coaches out there that do something similar.
Yeah. I was going to ask, is it more just life in career. General or is it somewhat focused a little to business?
So we're kind of working with two different coaches. So the guy that we've hired to do our bookkeeping is also, the reason why we chose him. The reason why we're working with him is his whole thing is like the bookkeeping is the easy part. The hard part is changing the way that you think about money as a business owner.
Totally.
So we're working with him to get rid of the scarcity mentality, like to change the way we're thinking about money. And then we have another life coach that we're working with, and she's just in general, she's helping us to just with life stuff, like
that's great.
General thinking stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Boy, that kid.
Oh, that's fabulous. Because, well, so hopefully you both recognize that if you're willing to put the time and the money towards the life coaching on its own, you're thinking positively. Like, yeah. I won't even allow myself to get a gym membership. I have to go outside to get my exercise just in case next month isn't going the way I don't get the referrals that I thought I might the next month. It's ridiculous.
You're right. And all it would take would maybe one little change to make you shift differently in your thinking on that. Because you're right. Yeah. The money thing.
Yes.
That could be a great topic.
I think so.
On its own.
I think so.
On what benefits you get out of that. Because it's true, man. As far down as you are this road and even how successful you can be, I think any normal person is going to still fear that this is temporary and it's not real. And I'm going against, you know, the system by being solo entrepreneur.
Right.
The more you can get to really reassure yourself is fantastic. I'm really glad you shared that, Dave. That's like awesome. That's really cool.
That's awesome. I know. Yeah. It's like for that episode, we ought to have him on again. What are you doing in a few weeks?
Yeah, right.
and your accountant. Let's get him on.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's so important, especially with the money part, because so many people just make such like emotional kind of connections with money and these things. And it really helps to have someone else from an outside perspective.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
Kind of put it into the right perspective
nice.
For you.
Cause, nice.
Yeah. It all
can
feels
I, can
very...
I share?
Yeah, go for it.
I just want to share one thing, one lesson that we've learned that kind of blew our minds. And I just wanted to share it because I love this.
Oh, yeah. Go for it.
Both my wife and I had really, really negative thoughts around debt, any kind of debt. Like we never wanted to have any sort of business debt. We didn't want to raise capital. We bootstrapped everything. And anytime we incur any sort of debt, like in the past, we just felt like, oh, it's so guilty and this is stupid. And why are we doing this? And in working with one of the coaches that I mentioned before, one of the things she said was, she's like, do you have a mortgage on your house? And we were like, yeah. She's like, do you feel guilty about that mortgage? And we're like, no. Why? Never think about it. Why? She's like, that's the biggest, by far, that's the biggest debt you have. That's debt. That's a giant debt that you have incurred. And you don't feel guilty about it at all because it's socially acceptable, right? Like, it's almost seen as being responsible, right? Like, that's
it's
just
savings,
you had to do
in a
that.
Way.
It's an investment, right? Like, and so it blew our minds to realize, like, one, we had no negative feelings about that debt, which was the biggest debt that we have. And and two, like, yeah, like it's up to you to decide how you want to think about whatever it is that you're doing. I'm not saying everyone should go out and incur tons of debt. I'm just saying, like, you have a lot of the way that you think about the world. There's a lot of things that you've never examined about how you think. And there's a lot of really negative emotional stuff that comes up whenever you run into the way that you think about debt or the way that you think about your career or the way that you think about anything. So you can really change. It's like going in and like retooling your operating system, right? It's like,
totally.
You don't have to just live within the boundaries of what you currently have set for yourself. You can change the code, right? So that for me was like, I don't know. That just blew my mind. I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I communicated that
well.
But
What a great point. Great perspective.
Every time I've heard a tip like that, it's always about like what you said. You can change the way you react or think about a certain situation. It's up to you. You have that choice. And someone's got to tell you that so you can start exercising it. That's killer.
That's awesome.
Really nice.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's great. So other than that, do you have any advice, any kind of last advice you can leave our listeners with who may be considering going down the road you just went down and, you know, to leave their full-time role in corporate America to start their own side hustle full time.
Yeah. Don't quit until you found something that you know is going to work. But as soon as you feel like, as soon as you arrive at that point, quit. Don't wait. And start with a niche, like find a tribe, find an audience that's being underserved.
Yeah,
that's the real key is find an audience that's being underserved in a specific area. Like you see a lot of graphic designers.
Not quilters, that's already taken.
Not quilters. Yeah. Stay away.
Stay away from that.
Find a tribe that's being underserved because like you'll see a lot of graphic designers that want to design tees for graphic designers, right? Like,
yeah,
that's not,
yeah,
that's not a great tribe. Like, go find somebody else. And whether it's t-shirts or whatever it is, like, the product almost doesn't matter once you
it's
find
just the
that
platform
right tribe,
it's just the delivery,
it's the art that speaks.
Yeah, yeah, you yep. can deliver your art, your creativity, whatever it is, in a bunch of different ways once you find that underserved audience. And I mean, for I would say for most people, like, don't look outside to something that you're not already doing. Like, for me and my wife, it was like she was already a member of that tribe, she already knew that tribe. That's why we've gone in that direction. If we had tried to go after, like, hunters or something, I don't think we would be very successful because we don't know anything about that.
Or authentic. It wouldn't be authentic. Yeah.
Yeah, it wouldn't be authentic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting.
And anyone can go on, like, Facebook Audience Insights and just type in interests like that, like hunting or quilting or mining or whatever, and just see how many people pop up with that interest. And that'll be a good little, you know, test to see if there's a market for it or not. So
straight away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, this has been so great.
Because we have
David.
So many listeners that they're all talk. They talk about leaving and starting their independent and or not even starting, they're running it. They're freelancing.
Yeah.
And they haven't quite done it. Which, you know, if it weren't for the economy taking a dip back in 2008, I don't know that I would have. I don't know that I'd be here.
Oh,
it really forced me before my
we all have our things.
One of the co-founders told me I was about to be laid off. I thought, do I have enough to go off of with my mortgage at the time? You know, it's scary. Yeah.
It can be, and it's not for everyone too. Like, some people are probably served staying in a corporate job, and some people really thrive on their own. So,
Yeah, and I'm really glad Dave started out by saying that he started fresh by mentioning that. I think that's really good. To point that out,
yeah.
David,
yeah.
do you wear other people's brands? And what are
they? I do.
I know. I was almost a little conscious of what I was going to wear today. Like, will he like this type style?
Yeah, I was going to ask after the show where you got that. I like it. It's cool.
Super dry.
nice.
Yeah, it's cool.
I do.
But yeah,
I love.
Who are they?
So I love graphic t-shirts. I love. I don't know if it's homage or homage. I don't know if you've heard of those guys. They do, like, classic, like, collegiate style apparel, like, tees. I love those guys. I, of course, love Cotton Bureau. I'm sure you guys have heard of them. They used to be United Pixel Workers, then they transitioned.
Thanks again for being on with us, David. Yeah, Where can people find you online and find Stately Type?
So statelytype.com is where you can find all of our apparel, everything that we sell. We also have makervalleybrand.com. Which just redirects to all the quilting stuff on Stately Type. You can find me on Instagram at instagram.com/statelytype or Maker Valley, same thing, instagram.com/makervalley.
Nice. Really great stuff, David. It was great to have you on again, and we will have you
on the
show again soon. So we have a great listener question this week, but before we talk about that, let's talk about some FreshBooks. FreshBooks makes ridiculously easy to use cloud accounting software for agencies and freelancers just like you and me that'll help you work smarter, get organized, and most importantly, get you paid quickly. We like that. So yeah, basically, I use it all the time. I've even got a few recurring invoices on there for ongoing SEO work for clients. I love that part.
Oh, yeah.
So basically, it's an ongoing monthly fee, and then I just set it and forget it. And I get the checks.
Set it as reoccurring.
The checks just roll in. Digital virtual checks.
Nice.
Through FreshBooks. We love it. You just make it so easy to set up the invoices and brand them so they look like your brand. Look so much more professional than doing it the old way with PayPal or whatever. It just makes you look really like your... like you've arrived and you've made it on the scene. So that's what we like around here. They've got lots of cool things, the automated late payment reminders. So if anyone tries to be a deadbeat and not pay you, they will be the bad cop and send those emails out for you. So you can save face and just keep your good relationship with your clients. And of course, they have great phone support with zero attitude. They always answer within three rings or less, which is pretty rare these days. So to claim your 30-day unrestricted free trial, can't believe you if you haven't done that already. Come on, get on it. 30 days free, I guarantee you. You try it, you're not going back. It's going to be that life-changing for you. So to get your 30 free days, go to freshbooks.com/deeplygraphic and enter Deeply Graphic Design in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Once again, freshbooks.com/deeplygraphic and then enter Deeply Graphic Design in the How Did You Hear About Us section. All right, cool. So we have a listener question today from Samantha Kleinschmidt. You want to do your best Samantha voice, Mikkel? And...
wow, good job. I wasn't going to dare pronounce her last name, but I think you did that totally right.
Pretty good.
Oh, I know my German names. Come on.
Yeah, very German. Yeah. So Samantha writes, has there ever been an instance where a client has come to you with unfinished working files from another designer and things have actually worked out? I see this as a huge red flag of bad relations between the old designer and client. And when I've gone against my intuition and taken the job, it's always turned out pretty horrible. Just wondering if this is a universal flag, that's a red flag, or if someone has ever had a good experience editing other designers' work.
Interesting. I love this question.
That's a good question.
And I've definitely been on the receiving end of this. Like, I've definitely had clients contact you and say, yeah, we had this horrible designer, but here's their files. And my thought is, well, they're so bad. Why are we even going?
You're not doing me any favor. You're not doing yourself a favor in keeping it.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I mean, this is a two-pronged question, of course, because what I, it's always a huge red flag to me when a client comes to me really bad-mouthing their previous designer. I always have many follow-up questions with that. I always want to know, like, because, there are cases where maybe the designer was the a-hole in the situation, not the client.
Totally.
But I think that's when you basically want to have that conversation and you want to figure out, and I think your spidey sense will tell you, is this person unreasonable or did they just get a bad designer? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, well, I wonder too.
Have you been on the receiving end all the same, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's funny, and I'm kind of entertaining one right now, but it's not so much that it was, but like, so she mentioned too, it's just unfinished work. So I guess it could be unfinished and okay, and wanting to continue, or unfinished because it wasn't good. So like, it could go both ways. If it's been bad, if it's bad, I mean,
but unfinished tells me that that client probably pissed the designer off so much they fired the client.
Yeah. Or the design, maybe, hey, on the flip side, the designer could have been the one and they just said, I can't deal with you anymore. It could, there's so many exceptions to this, but like, here's my thought. I guess if you are taking something and it is bad and they didn't like it and they're coming, just like you said, Wes, like I would encourage them. The only way I will work with you at this point is if we start from scratch. There's no sense of even entertaining that if it's not good. There's a reason it's not good. They didn't go back. They didn't look. You didn't build the personas. All the stuff that we highly stress, right? So I'm in the middle of waiting to hear back from this other client that is doing a line of alcoholic bottles, beverages, and all these great things. But they're like, we already have this. We already have that. We just need one more SKU at the very end, the high-end one. So I asked, I'd love to see what you have already established in your brand, because then it will tell me, is that something I can actually continue with and do something very successful, or is it already in a bad place? So I'm waiting to see. They're very reluctant in sending me the stuff. So I'm like thinking, this is probably not going to go, but I'm going to try. Why not? You know, to see, I think it can go right. You can rescue, look at it that way. Maybe it's about rescuing a job and being the, going back to step
sometimes-
one.
Sometimes these are polish cleanup opportunities where the client takes a step back and is like, holy, why didn't we engage with MKM sooner? You know, that kind of thing.
Point.
You can wow in that respect because they are seeing before and after.
Yes.
They are.
Yeah.
From designer to designer. So it can give a really awesome opportunity.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, Mikkel, because I get a lot of clients who come to me saying, we were working with Mikkel and we've got these terrible designs. What can you do with them?
You asshole!
And then I get the call up the floor after you.
I get the call that says, I worked with this girl, Mikkel, and then it went to some guy named Wes.
Oh my gosh, was that low-hanging fruit
and
or
we
not?
Hear, and we hear Longo is the best web designer in town.
We're not going to end the show on a funnier note than that.
Oh,
so, Wes, that was awesome. You little a-hole.
But in all seriousness, I think this is just one of those things that, you just got to feel out how reasonable slash unreasonable is this client? Yeah. And do you want to take on a job where you're basically taking existing files and designs and changing them, like flipping them basically? Or do you just want it, would it be better for you just to work from scratch? I like working from scratch. In fact, I find it confusing sometimes if I'm just going into other designers' files and trying to make sense of it and what they kind of had envisioned for it. So true. I tend to, I also get this one. I also get people like wanting, they'll contact me about their website and they just want to make a couple changes to their website.
That's, I don't do that. Yeah, either. No. Yeah. You should be really clear with that. But let's not forget too, a younger designer who might need a really good client in this situation could really rescue it. And then that client goes, whoa, you were my savior. So that's why this question's so open and it's a good conversation to have, but there's so many different ways around it based on maybe where you are and what you need and what you can do. Because I've actually had some stuff come over from other designers and it was very well laid out and very, you know, just as many are bad, but you know, all layered, all numbered, all, you know, very well done, bleeds and everything. So there's exceptions, but don't rule it out automatically, I guess is the question or the point.
Yeah. It's all up to you and trust that intuition. When you know that it's probably a bad client to work with, we've said it a million times, don't take the job just because you feel like you have to, because what's going to happen is you're going to be proven right and you're going to end up not getting paid or something in the end anyway. Yes. So always trust your gut. Train yourself to do that. That's the biggest thing here. So anyway, thank you, Samantha, for the question. We love getting them and we love the audio questions and via Twitter as well. You can do that on using hashtag DGDC. We monitor that hashtag. Or just email your question to questions@thedeependesign.com. All right, guys. Can't wait to see you both in sunny Los Angeles.
See you in a few days.
See you in a few days. All right, guys, with that in mind, keep designing. Catch us next time on the Deeply Graphic Design Cast.